Hi guys, this is part two of our ongoing Creators Talk series, where each week I ask the men and women that make CryptoZ possible to share the knowledge about their craft and their creative process to inspire the storyteller inside you, whether you are an aspiring writer, actor, or director, or even an established creator who is interested in this medium. We live in a society saturated in information and not enough time, and I strongly believe that creators have a responsibility to merge entertainment and long-term value, whether it is educational, emotional, or cultural. So thank you for your patience and your loyalty as we are building the founding blocks of Euphony. And today, I'm especially proud of bringing you Danielle Trissoni, the co-creator of CryptoZ. Just to give you a little bit of background, Danielle is the best-selling author of the historical fantasy thrillers Angelology and Angelopolis. Her latest novel came out in April, it's called The Ancestor, and as you'll learn, it's related to CryptoZ. But she's also an expert in literary horror, as she has her own column in the New York Times, and she's been twice on the jury for the Pulitzer Prize in fiction. All this to say that she is a temple of knowledge, and we're having a great conversation about storytelling across medium. If you know someone that might be interested in this topic, please feel free to share this episode via text message. And if there is a question you wanted to ask Danielle or me, feel free to text 646-229-3423 and we'll make sure we'll answer it. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. So I guess my first question is, how did CryptoZ came to life as an audio drama?
Right. So The Ancestor is the novel that I wrote, and the Icemen who are featured in CryptoZ were created when I wrote that book. I
also remembered a historical character, a cryptozoologist in the book.
Right. There was a cryptozoologist in The Ancestor. You know, he had a very tiny little role in the middle of the book. And so when I finished writing that book, I realized that I still had a lot that I wanted to say about this character. The character's name is Dr. Feist, and also the Icemen who show up at the end of the book.
Right. What was interesting to you in the science or pseudoscience of cryptozoology?
So in the Ancestor, the novel, we learn slowly that this woman, I'm giving some spoilers here for people who haven't read it, that this woman has a DNA match with human beings that emerged before Homo sapiens. And so that in itself, the history of human evolution and what it means to be human was very, very interesting to me. I think cryptozoology is, for those of you who don't know what that actually means, it's the study, and sometimes, people think it's the false study of animals that may or may not exist. They haven't been verified by science.
Right.
But so I think that in general, in all of my books, I've been interested in the idea of coming up against something that's so different and other than what we are as humans, that it requires lots of exploration narratively. And so the idea of cryptozoology would be fascinating to me. And in the book, in The Ancestor, it's an integral part of the character's journey of discovering who she is to realize that she is something other than what she thought she was.
It also reminds me a little bit of the construction of angelology and how the fantastical world sort of merges into the reality with sort of dystopian quality to it.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, that's definitely one element of what I like to do. I mean, something that I think is fascinating in general is creating a narrative world, whether it's in a novel or in an audio drama, that feels so real that when something unreal or surprising happens, we sort of have to reassess everything that we're experiencing. So for example, when I wrote the novel Angelology, which is about the human and angel hybrids called Nephilim, and basically a young woman discovers that she is connected to those creatures, I had people writing to me after the book came out saying, is this real? And, could this scene actually have happened? And it's because I integrated the real world with the fantasy world, or with this sort of speculative world, in such a way that It's hard to tell what's real and what's not real. Crypto Z is very much like that. I wanted it to feel like science, feel like we're with scientists, feel like we're in the real world. And then when, you know, sort of strange or unexpected things happen or strange, unexpected creatures show up, then we're, you know, we're taken into that and we believe it.
You've wrote screenplays before. We even collaborated on some. But this is definitely your first audio play. Could you speak a little bit about the specificity of the medium and collaboration with the director, maybe?
So you asked a couple of things there. You know, working with, you know, with a director on this was really different in that what we're looking, the point of connection that we're looking for was about sound. It wasn't about finding the right look for an actor. It wasn't about finding the right location. It was all about what sounds great and what can we make sound great. And so that was really fun and interesting for me as a writer. And it was a challenge, you know, as a writer to stop thinking so much visually, which is how I think when I write, actually. And it's also how I think when I write sort of a regular screenplay, and to start thinking about how I hear things.
So according to a survey that we're running that inspired me to start all those interviews, is that a lot of our listeners are actually interested in maybe doing their own podcast or their own audio drama. And I imagine that they're writers, maybe they're screenwriters, maybe they're novelists. Do you have any tips for them to make the transition to audio drama only or audio only?
So the one thing that was the big lesson for me in writing audio drama was how fun it was. And I think that's because it's a new form and there aren't a lot of calcified rules about how the scripts look and how the scenes are broken down. And, you know, so much of television writing, for example, is based on this kind of older system of commercial breaks. So there's these acts and you have to have a sort of cliffhanger, a climax at the end of those acts. And being a novelist first and coming from that, the freedom that writing novels allowed me, I always sort of chafed at those limitations. So for the very first time when I started writing Crypto Z, I felt really free. I didn't think of it as having to have any kind of form whatsoever, ever, except for the form that I wanted it to take. Other than, you know, we were going to stop at 25 or 30 minutes. That was the limit. So the narrative unfolded in my mind and on the page simultaneously. I didn't have to, you know, like make an outline and then say, okay, we're going to have this scene here, and we're going to do exposition this way. I didn't do any of that. I just really let it go. You know, as it came in my mind. So that's very different, obviously, than writing a novel or writing a script or writing anything, really, you know, especially with narrative and the kind of novels I write, which are very much plotted, you know, suspense, thriller type novels. You have to really lay it all out and have it logically unfold and roll out in a certain way. Otherwise, the story doesn't make sense. So, and also I think with the really fun part about writing for audio drama is that I went hunting when I was writing this for situations and scenes that would make noise. Right? Like I went in my mind, right. I wouldn't write a scene unless I could envision that there would be some unusual sounds attached to it. So, you know, for a large part of it, the two main characters, not a large part, but, you know, a section of it, they're in a cave, right? And the reason I wanted them to be in a cave is I thought the acoustics will be amazing. It's this enclosed place where they're going to be, you know, sitting by a fire that's crackling, and they're going to be talking, and they're going to be drinking a beer at one point. And, you know, you're going to hear all of this interesting sound magnified. So that was my reasoning for choosing that location. And the same with a lot of other locations that ended up being in the audio drama. I wanted to just discover what it would be like to just hear it.
Right. It's super interesting because actually we were doing this interview with Fiona last week, and she was explaining how voiceover and audio drama was extremely freeing for actors because they're not cast for characters that look like them, basically. And it gives them the opportunity to really expand and have fun in complete different genre and different type of characters, even creatures, even aliens. And I'm wondering if for a writer, do you have the same feeling of like being free from structure, writing structures and things like that?
For me, it was also very free, right, because of the structure, but also, as I said, because it's a new form and anything is possible. All of the sort of expectations that people have when they're reading a novel or watching a film, all of that went out the window with this because there aren't many audio dramas out there. So people are just, you know, learning about them as I am as a writer and as actors are as actors. So it really feels like this very fresh and exciting moment.
So in relationship to screenwriting, would you recommend audio drama as a way to train or work the craft of drama and live action and the spoken words and the dialogues? All the things that you would need in TV or film.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the difference between writing a novel and writing something like, you know, a play or, you know, writing a script. I think that if you, you know, for anyone out there, a new screenwriter, a new writer of any kind, audio drama offers the possibility to create something yourself, right? You don't need a whole lot of money and people, unless you're doing something like we did. Crypto Z actually was a big production for an audio drama. We had many actors. We had a composer, as people know, a sound designer, director, right? Like we had a big bunch of people that were working together to make this as sumptuous, is my favorite way to describe it today, as possible. But, you know, you can make an audio drama that's very scaled down. It can be you, your script, and a microphone, and you can make something and put it out there, and that's that. And it's really exciting because, you know, on the one hand, writers feel frustrated because people are downloading stuff for free on the internet and not buying books or not watch, you know, paying to go see films in the way that they used to. But on the other hand, it totally opens up the landscape for you in a way that you couldn't have. It wasn't like this 10 years ago. You couldn't have done this 10 years ago. And I'm seeing, and other people are doing this and getting their foot in the door, as you said, Hadrian. Like it's a way to showcase your talent in a non sort of threatening and non-expensive way.
So let's talk a little bit about the structure of Crypto Z, because I got some questions or comments or notes, however you want to call it. So the story is framed in a recording that is a flash forward. And then we track events, we circle back in time, we track events somewhat linearly, and then we also fall back into flashbacks in for each characters. Can you tell us a little bit about how this kind of structure came to you in terms of narration and then all those layer of times? I know it's a little bit your specialty and it's kind of what you've been doing since your first novel, Falling Through the Earth. But
yeah, I mean, for this, the primary thing whenever I start a piece of storytelling is the first thing I want people to understand is who are we with? Where are we? Why are we there? And why do I care? Like, those are the questions that I always ask myself when I start a piece of writing. And in an audio format, it seemed to me that the very best way to do that would to create a super tense situation with someone speaking into a recording device, right? Because that is, it's a trope, it's a method that people can relate to because everyone's listening and, you know, on a device, and that's a device, and it's like almost like whispering into your ear, right? Because it's a mechanical connection. But also I knew that we needed, for Jane Silver, who is, you know, the one speaking and she's sort of the star of the show, to make a connection to the listener in a way that would hold the listener throughout a 10-part audio series. We want to make a connection right away. We don't want to make, you know, you don't want to wait for episode two to make a connection with the lead. And so she has a very emotional opening. She tells you why she's there. She tells you what she wants. She makes you want to come with her on that journey. And I think that she really captures people right away. So that's why I made a frame where we kind of go into the future and then go back. For me, backstory and all of those things are so important, but I also think that without the character and without the strength of a character, taking your hand, you know, metaphorically and leading you into the narrative, it's going to fail.
Right. I think you went further than that. And maybe this is also some choices we made when we recorded and in post. But we have narration. We have present time recording voices. We have internal dialogue and trains of thoughts. And of course, we have present time live action dialogue, traditional dialogue. There's so many layers and techniques involved, and because this is something that's very hard to do in film, for example, because the camera kind of locks you always in present time.
So we discussed this early on in the process, and we, you know, both of us agreed that some of the thing, you know, some of the most detrimental narrative pitfalls, I guess, in audio drama is that because there's no visuals, it's hard, sometimes hard to know where you are and who's speaking and what's going on, right? And so for Jane Silver to take that almost omniscient narrative point of view and to guide the listener through, whenever we sort of change scenes or something becomes potentially confusing, Jane Silver will sort of say, this is what's happening, and you know, clarify and almost set up the scene for you. And I thought that that was really important because who wants to be lost? So I really feel very strongly that in audio drama, you have to have a guiding principle or a kind of reset button. And that in this is Jane Silver.
Just to make it more concrete to the to listeners, let's take an example. For example, the tapes that Jane Silver is listening of herself when she was in therapy.
The tapes, they were found by Jane Silver, and we're listening to them as if we're listening to them with her in her head, right? So that ability, like a novel, right? Like the novel, the primary strength of a novel is to display characters' consciousness. And that's something that a film really can't do very well, in my opinion, is get inside someone's head, right? Everything has to be exterior and acted and expressed. Sure. But a novel and poetry and other forms of written narrative can do that. They express consciousness. What's amazing about audio drama is that it does that. Right? It expresses a character's consciousness through sound and through expressions of feeling and action in the way that a film does. So it just perfectly connects these mediums together and becomes something different.
Audio drama is it feels like a new medium. At the same time, it's also a very old medium, old-time radio plays. Is that something that you see? Why do you think it's so hot right now, and how do you see it in the future being part of the literary experience or the narration storytelling experience for people?
Well, it's interesting because I'm young enough that I've never heard the old time radio plays. And when I talk about audio drama or fiction podcasts, however you call them, there's been a number of people that I know that are like, oh, I loved listening to those. You know, I would go seek them out in the on BBC, or I would listen, you know, go out and find them and listen to these old radio dramas. And I honestly had never heard them. So I was coming at this as if it were a totally new 21st century form of storytelling. And in some ways, with the iPhone and smartphones and portable media coming with us wherever we're going, it is a 21st century form of storytelling. It's one of the few things, you know, audiobooks included, anything that audio that you can just, you know, pop in your earbuds and you have an entire universe in your head. So in that regard, I do think it's very modern and and the future in some ways. Also just, you know, from the point of view of a creator, I'm someone who just loves to tell stories, and I'm happy to do it in book form. I'm happy to do it as an audio drama. I'm happy to do it as a television creator. As long as I can shape those stories and give them to a listener, reader, or a viewer in a high quality way, I'm thrilled. So for me to be able to have access to this as a medium, it just opens up the horizon for me in an enormous way. It's not just that I can create a book now. I can also create an audio drama. And, you know, we're also trying to do this with television. So what, this is kind of another, you know, a different way of looking at this. So what technically did you need to make this? You know, people say, oh, it's so easy, you can just record things. You know, people don't say that, but, you know, I think people might have the idea that you're just, you know, people are speaking into a microphone and then it's recorded and that's that. But clearly with an audio drama like Crypto Z, which is, you know, has so much production.
It's not so much technical. It's more to have a team that could carry that. The main challenge with audio drama is that if there is one thing that doesn't feel authentic or doesn't feel real, or performance that is just slightly off, or something that just gives you cues that this is actors in a room reading, for example, the show completely falls apart. So I think the main challenge was like, well, how do we make it so real that people cannot tune out? So it took me almost 6 months to a year to find the right actors, for example. This, you know, vast range of accents in the show is so particular and so important because we wanted to make it big, right? With actions and things like that. Then it was to build this entire world in my head first. And so I had to completely imagine all the subtleties of the situation the characters were in, whether it's like a thunderstorm or an avalanche or heavy snow or light snow or rocks or a beach or sand. You know, all of this kind of affects the breath, and all of it affects the way the voice should be performed. So I had to basically completely have the movie in my head before I could go and record it. And then the freedom of audio and the beauty of audio is that once you're in the recording room, you can improvise on that and build on top of it to kind of like go even deeper in some subtleties of things that, you know, the actors could, you know, ways they could interact with the environment or props that obviously they don't have and that I have to invent on the spot.
So one thing that I thought was interesting is that your actors were not anywhere near you. So you were directing, you know, from a big distance, one actor was in London, one was in LA, like how, and so when you're talking about, you know, that sort of interactiveness with props or whatever, and you being a part of that, like how did that work?
So we were technically, Hollis and I were not even in the same studio. We were like live, so we connected four different studios in around the world, so we were in live sessions together. So Fiona was in London, Jameson was in Los Angeles, Hollis is in New York City, and I was in another part of New York City, and we sort of like all got together in it's not a Zoom conference or something like that, but it's basically the same idea. And the actors were able to hear each other, and I was able to hear them, and they were able to hear me in the studios, so that, you know, we could work together. And to be honest, just because it's audio, I would actually prefer not to see them. If I get emotions or informations by watching them, I can't tell if it's coming from their voice or if it's coming from their face. And I think it was better for me to actually be blind and just focus on the voice completely. And if it didn't come through the voice, I had to find a way to make it come through.
So what do you see? What is your challenge? This is taking a little bit of a jump, but what would you, you know, what if you could imagine a sort of new angle directorially that you're going to go for season two? What would you do different? And what would you like to experiment with in season two?
Well, it's going to sound like a contradiction with what I just said, but I feel like if we, all the actors and I, were sort of like all together in the same space, that we could actually move physically would even give me even more definition and more precision. Because I could play with the distance of the mic, I could have them turn their head to some degree, even if Cryptozy doesn't feel that way. The fact that everything has been recorded in a studio, the voices are pretty clean. I did some experiment and we did some of that, like, you know, wearing some mask and changing the way they were speaking with hands and scarves and props that I had them come in the studio with so that it affects the voice. But I think there is a lot of possibility there that could be explored more fully if we were together in the same room.
Yeah, that would be fun. I would love to hear that.
This is all the time we have for. So thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. Thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you so much for listening, and see you next time.